This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, it is the Brock and Salk podcast, and that's kind of true. I say that for Brock's benefit, because he likes when I say, but is it? But is it the Brock and Salk podcast? No, Brock. Spear fishing in Alaska. Is that what he's doing?
Yes.
Spear fishing?
Underwater scuba fishing.
like in Thunderball. Okay. Is that a good reference? Timely?
Yeah, sure.
James Bond movie from like 1966.
No Brock here, so you're in big trouble on the old movie references.
Oh no. That one's a little before my time.
I have seen Thunderball. It's a nice movie.
Honestly, Thunderball is my favorite James Bond movie, but whatever. No Brock today, so it's just us. Kyle, howdy, me. Joe Fan will join us for a little while. We'll talk a little. We're going to have to talk about this Julio Jones thing, and I'll admit, like, we're going to talk Mariners to start this, but the Julio Jones thing has, like, blown my mind. I was one of those stories where I read about it and was like, oh, okay, well, that's just not a real thing, and move on. Like, I don't even need to talk about it. Like, of course the Seahawks aren't going to be in the running for Julio Jones. Why would they want a 32-year-old receiver who makes a gazillion dollars and who they'd have to give up draft capital, which they don't have for? Oh, this is like when people want Jake Locker because he played for the Huskies. Like, there's no reality here. Didn't even dawn on me that this would turn into, oh, and the Seahawks are one of the teams. And shame on me. I should have
seen that coming.
Of course I should have. Russell Wilson and the
design. And also, it making no sense is why it's a possibility for the Seahawks.
All right. Well, I should have put all that together. I did not. So we'll talk about that with Joe Fan when he makes his way in here. I was out camping with the kids this weekend, which was, as I'm sure you can
imagine.
Humble
brag for not necessarily a handy.
Mr. Northwest camping on Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. Woo! Oh, yeah.
A regular homesteader.
Yep, me, Heather, the kids, camping south of Yakima. Yeah, it was.
Okay.
Near Goldendale.
Sure.
Can I ask you guys, there's a point to the story here, but how do you get campfire smell out of your hair? I'm on day three.
Time.
Like I've shampooed and used like the hardcore like eucalyptus conditioner three times. And every time I like move out of the way and then move back, I still
get
smell.
A whiff.
Yeah.
You try tomato paste?
No.
That's the big, like, you know, when you get sprayed by a skunk classic.
Right. I should climb
into bathe in tomato paste.
Oatmeal bath too. That'll do it.
It'll get the campfire.
Like chicken pox. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of like making me ill. Like I can move around. Like, oh my God.
This is a car smell. All of a sudden you take everything out of the car. It's
right.
Like, there's been a smoky tent in here. Like, whoa.
That smell is pervasive and you just can't get rid of it. But one of the nice things about camp is it gives a lot of chance to talk, obviously, because there's not a lot else to do while you're sitting there. And we're listening to this book on tape, and the person, there's a character in the book, it was really a sheep, but the sheep's name was Big Poppy. And the people in the book live outside, like in the Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires. And he had named his first animals Carla and Yaz after Carl Yastrzemski. Okay, that makes sense.
Sure.
And so now he has a sheep and it's Big Poppy. But we're listening to this book on tape, and the woman reading it kept saying Big Pappy.
Oh,
and I was pretty annoyed by it.
That's problematic.
I was pretty aggravated. Like, it's not Big Pappy. It's obviously Big Poppy. Oh, well, and they don't, like, specifically say he was named for the player, but Carla and Yaz, like, it's Big Poppy.
You know.
It's not.
You know what we're trying to do.
It's not Pappy Van Winkle.
That happens in books on tape.
It's Big Poppy.
That don't drive you. I listened to Boys in the Boat on tape, and they kept talking about Ephrata as Ephrata.
Oh,
and they went over to Ephrata. And I'm like, this is kind of ruining my experience.
Yeah, you would think somebody would edit that. Like,
and also, this is a really, really quick Google search.
And also, the author doesn't get a chance to edit real
quick.
You're
putting this on tape one time.
Seriously. Like,
look it up.
And the woman who does these books are great, but like, really, nobody thought to be like, I think it might be Big Poppy. No one had heard of Poppy.
I think we should research
this. The FCC said they stand with him after he cursed in public. Like, no one thought to say, hey, maybe it's Big Poppy. Okay. Anyway, it brought up a conversation about being clutch. And what it means to be clutch. Because I was trying to, like, well, who is he? And I was like, well, he's a great player, but what really sets him apart is that he was clutch, right? That's like the thing. That's why he'll end up being in the Hall of Fame, despite everything else, is he was among the most clutch players of all time. Derek Jeter kind of went through some of these other guys that were incredibly clutch. And then the other side, which Kyle, we don't need to talk about what happened on Sunday here with the opposite of clutch, which is choking on Sunday, which exactly what Jordan
Spieth did. Fourth time he's led going into Sunday.
Ugh, and that was brutal. Not
close it out once.
That was not great. We're just not going to talk about that. How would you feel better about Jared Kelnick? I mean, as of press time, Kelnick's hitting 118. He's got an OPS of 446. I'm not down on him. I still think he's going to be fine. He's really young, etc. But would you feel better about all those numbers if he had just come up in a big clutch moment and delivered? Like, if he had all the same numbers, but like the Oakland game that ended in 10 innings where he had a chance to win it, walk it off in the ninth, man on second, would he have two outs, one out? Well, it was one out, man on second. If he had delivered, even with like a hard single in that moment to score the runner, would you just feel much better about where you were at with Jared Kelnick?
Dramatically better.
Right?
Moderately better.
You got one game of that when he second game up. You really
but that
felt
wasn't
like
clutch.
It
that
wasn't
was,
clutch.
That
but
was seeing the, his ability.
It was basically we won this game because of this guy.
Right. That's carrying the
it's
team.
It's carrying the team. It's not right. clutch, but and that's the same feeling.
It's clutch me. Adjacent.
Like Mike Zunino, he performs with Howdy in the house. So
that's right.
Get close to Howdy Fix. Jared Kelnick.
They want to get me back in the stadium. I'd be happy to fix that guy.
I hope we don't have to get to that point. I want no part of being at Howdy fixing Jared Kelnick. But I don't know. It just kind of dawned on me that like when he comes up in those big moments, I can kind of handle the fact that his numbers are terrible. Like, he's a kid and he's figuring it out, and this may take a little while of a job, and he's hit the ball hard and been somewhat unlucky. Like, I'm willing to kind of understand all of, I mean, I'm not happy that he's hitting 118.
You think he's going to fix that in the leadoff spot?
No, I'm not a fan of the whole leadoff
thing. And last night, bottom of the ninth inning,
right,
one out, runner at second base.
Perfect for him.
Strikeout looking.
I know. And it was against Yusmeiro Petit, right? Like, I mean, it was like a totally gettable situation for him. And, you know, it's funny. I watched that whole at bat. I don't want to go, I know it's a podcast. So we can get as deep as we want. But the sixth pitch of that at bat was a great foul ball. I know that sounds sort of silly, but like there was a ball right
Petit
on the outside corner.
Petit was pitching
corner.
In slow motion out
True.
There. He wouldn't throw the ball.
Right.
Dave Sims about to lose his mind on the radio broadcast.
He was.
Well, it was a great foul, and I know that sounds sort of silly, but that's one of those marks of veterans and really good hitters is that they know how to spoil pitches, and he did that. And it was really giving me like, oh, man. I literally said to myself, if he delivers here, I can't wait to go back and talk about the sixth pitch of the at-bat where he had a foul ball because it was one of those ones that keeps an at-bat going, extends it. It's important to be able to do that as a great hitter. And then, unfortunately, I mean, it's sort of a tough call. It was a strike. It was a tough pitch. Petit made a good pitch. Strike him out. What are you going to do? But that should be the lefty happy zone. And you're just like, oh, pull the trigger, man. And I'm sure he's a little, again, he's never failed before. So he's a little betwixt and between. He's never seen this happen. This is sort of what we said all along, right? Which is we want this guy to be able to fail a little bit so that he doesn't have to experience it in front of the world at the major league level. Well, he's experiencing it. How he handles this, how he gets coached through it is incredibly, incredibly important to what his future is so that we're not sitting here waiting for Howdy to fix him, right? I agree.
That.
I would drop him down and give him the opportunity, but maybe they believe the ego is so fragile that that would actually hurt him worse and that maybe you just keep him where he is, say, hey, we believe in you. The results don't matter yet. We care about the process. He is hitting the ball hard at times, and for now, you try to let him work his way through it.
This is sounding too much to me like a lot of the conversations we had around Evan White last year. He's hitting the ball hard. Mm-hmm. It's his batting average on balls in play. He's just been unlucky. Oh, don't worry about the strikeouts. Look at how hard he's hit the ball. And at some point, this will turn. And we saw this last week. Jared Kelnick's the unluckiest batter in baseball.
Yep.
He keeps hitting the ball hard, but it's right at guys. I bought that last year and it burned me.
Well, and you'd like to see a few more home runs because the nice thing about those is it doesn't matter where they position the players. It goes over their heads and into the seats and it's a home run. So, yeah, I agree with all that. I know it sounds stupid and like I'm sort of grasping at silver linings here, but the fact that his on-base percentage is essentially double his batting average is a good thing. That's something that you should take out of this. Like, despite the fact that he's hitting 118, he's got an on-base percentage of, like, 240, roughly.
He walked twice last night in a rough game.
Right. I mean, like, he's finding a way. He's not being stupid. He's
still
not
seeing pitches. He's not just up there swinging and flailing.
There's some value, I think, to what he's bringing. And there's a lot of reasons to be incredibly hopeful. Again, he's 21 years old, and anybody who seems to know anything about the game takes a look at him and is like, hey, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, he led the team in pitches seen yesterday.
Right.
The entire roster.
Now, we used to say some of those things about Dustin Ackley, too. So again, like, you don't know which way it's going to go, but everybody who's gotten eyes on him is like, yeah, he's going to be fine. So I'm going to believe that. It's only, you know, been a few games here. It's been, what, 17 games or so, and we've seen plenty of great players struggle, and especially at age 21. It's not like he's been in the minors for 10 years. Like, you know, he's barely spent even any time in the minors. So I am zero worried. I mean that. I would also feel better if he would just deliver in those clutch moments, because that's how legend grows. And I think part of the whole idea of Jared Kelnick is the legend that is associated with him and what he could turn into. I think that's part of what we want. So I will admit to being a little bummed that he didn't. And granted, they came back, they won the game. Totally shocked, by the way, if you were watching that game on Memorial Day, blown away by the fact that there was a man on second base in the 10th inning.
You and me both, dude.
I hate it. It is now, I have it for which is better later, but it's my least favorite rule in sports.
It's even harder when you're not watching the game. I was listening to the game. Like, and here comes the runner from where? What? Who?
I maybe we sound like old men who just, like, can't handle a little bit of change, but, like, I'll continue to say the same thing I've said since they introduced this rule. Who watches a 3.5-hour baseball game, gets to the 10th inning, and is then bored? Like, it's impossible.
All right, we got to move this thing along now.
Right, like
now that the game's on the line, let's go.
It's tied in the 10th. Who's like, ah, we got to get out of here? If you want to put a runner on second base to start an inning, do it in the 5th. Feel free to do it for the person who's like, yeah, I got an hour and a half in me, and now I'm getting bored. Okay, inject something into the game.
Yeah, throw in a happy inning.
Go ahead. Exactly. Honestly, that would bother me. Like, it's tricked out. Yeah. It's silly.
You want to pull your starter out? Okay, we're going to put him around on second base.
Okay.
You want to pull your starter out?
Fine, put him there. The 10th inning. Like, the game is now, like, it's gotten great. It's all the pressure, all the drama, and instead you're going to trick it out with some guy on second base? What? Anyway, I completely forgot he was there. They drive in. I was like, did he give up a double? Like, what happened?
What?
It legitimately wasn't until the Mariners came up in the bottom of the 10th, and he was like, Jack Mayfield will start at second. I was like, why? Oh!
Oh!
That's what happened. So, yeah.
Got it.
That's why they gave it. And because when they gave up the run, I was like, oh, they're going to lose this game now. They're not going to score a run. But the A's didn't really deserve that
run. You don't even have to manufacture a run.
No, you just put a guy on second base.
Bunt and a sack fly. The game's tied.
All you need is a single. By the way, a little credit to Manny Acta there, huh?
Oh, big hold on France?
Yeah, and like sent the guy earlier on Tony Kemp's terrible arm. Like, pretty, I don't know.
Kelnick's going from first.
Well, Blowers was one of those things we don't talk much about, but yeah. Manny Acta's pretty good.
I heard Blowers a little post-game talking about that, saying, can you recall a single time that you've questioned Manny Acta's send or keep
decision?
He's awesome.
Manny's awesome.
He's perfect.
I love Manny Acta in general. I think he has been one of Scott's secret weapons. And, you know, we had that big conversation last week about extending Scott and Jerry. And I'm, by the way, even more in the camp of they should do that. They should absolutely. They should. What else are you going to do? And you don't have to do it for that long. You could do it for maybe a 2-year deal, especially with Jerry. I don't know what else he can do. You know, we glossed over that part of it a little bit last week of like, okay, let's say you don't, or Jerry wants to leave. What else is he going to do? Who's going to hire him to be a
construction?
GM? Well, no. I mean, he could obviously go work at MLB Network and work in the media. But being a GM, there's only 30. And if he doesn't go good to great with this team and leaves a second team because he doesn't have enough control, I mean, that's essentially what happened with the Angels. He's like, oh, well, this doesn't work because those guys. How many chances do you get to do that? You think a third team or really a fourth team is going to give him a shot? So I think they do need to sign him. I think they can do it to a shorter deal. I would like to see it done sooner rather than later so that he can do the right things at the deadline, so that he can do the, like, and same with Scott. Give him the ability of not being a lame duck to go out and work his program with the amount of juice he should have. I don't know. I would like to see that get done soon because, as we've talked about, this offseason is enormously important for them. And I have a suggestion.
Go on.
instead of saying the Mariners need to spend this offseason, I think we should use a different word. We've found in the last few years in politics that the word choice of how you describe things is incredibly important, right? Is it the estate tax or the death tax? Like, there's all these like words where you can choose different ways to describe them, right?
Euphemisms.
Instead of saying the and this is how we're going to convince people, okay? Instead of saying the Mariners need to spend this year, the Mariners need to invest this offseason.
Oh.
They don't need to spend more.
Oh, really?
Okay, spin me. What do you got?
They need to invest more.
Is this about, like, caring?
No, they just need to invest money into the team. They need to invest money into free agency in order to make more money later. It will work.
You can't look at it as a sunk cost.
Right. It's not that they need to spend more. They need to invest more.
Yes. And when you make investments, this is a very important distinction. I like this. Because when you make investments, you might have to look at a year or two where you're in the red.
That's right.
Where you don't make money back.
Right.
Or you don't actually get your returns yet. That's not the point. The point of investing is not to make money right now.
They need to invest.
The point is to make money in the future.
And they will.
This sounds like you need to convince someone of something. You're trying to convince your spouse.
No,
like, no, Heather, this is why we don't look at this as an investment.
Right. We're going to join
John
this country
Stanton.
Club. It's
this
not that
isn't
it's
just
pricey.
Spending.
It's an investment
it's
in
an
my happiness.
Equity membership. Why do I feel like I'm being spun here?
No, you're not. They just need to invest. And I think that we can start it. The three of us, we'll get Brock on board. He'll be a piece of cake.
Okay, sure.
So the four of us will start using this language. We will make a pledge today that we won't talk anymore about the Mariners needing to spend this offseason. We're only going to talk about how they need to invest this offseason. You guys in?
I'll do it.
We've seen the power of what we can do before with our political campaigns.
That's right.
Moving in the fences, getting
Bring
rid of Jose
safe
Lopez.
Bring in Cofield's walls.
Right, we did that.
Da-da.
We had the whole get rid of Jose Lopez campaign. I mean, we've been very successful.
No way, Jose.
Yes. So the new one is going to be invest. We have to really change that word. Get spend out of your lexicon. They need to invest. They need to invest in a top-tier starter.
Badly.
They need to invest in an infielder, right? Like, these are things they need to do. They need to invest in this product so that it gets over the top. And one other piece of advice for them. Don't get greedy. Get good first. Before you get greedy, get good. And I'm going to bring up a story that popped up. And this is another one. Kind of like the Julio Jones thing where I was like, not real. Nothing to that. And that's this idea of trading Taylor Trammell right now. Got like Morosi was floating this idea. And I was like, oh, the Mariners must be Don't trade Taylor Trammell. No, that is a terrible idea. Especially if your reasoning is you have too many outfielders. Like who? Jack Mayfield and Donovan Walton, who both get starts for you in the outfield in the last week? What are you talking about?
Crazy.
You don't have too many outfielders. None of these guys are guaranteed. Kelnick's hitting 118. Julio's in single A. Kyle Lewis just got hurt again. Mitch Haniger's constantly hurt. What are you talking about? You're consistently playing Dylan Moore, Sam Haggerty, and Donovan Walton, who's a shortstop, in the outfield. But you're going to start trading your outfielders because you've got a glut? Stop it. Stop right there. No, you're not. Get good before you get greedy, then get greedy. I want you to be greedy eventually, but make sure these guys are good first. The whole idea of having a lot of prospects is you don't know which ones are going to work out. That's why you've got Emerson Hancock and
George Kirby
and Logan Gilbert and Isaiah Campbell and. You think all those guys are going to be great? They're not. They're not. Some of them will turn into being okay. One of them will blow out his arm and never be anything. Like, that's what happens. So don't get greedy. Get good, then get greedy. And hold off on Taylor Trammell. Unless you think he's bad. Unless there's something like, and I don't think that's the case. I don't believe they think he's bad. By all accounts, he's a great kid. He surprised them by even being in the majors to begin the year. He's now where he's supposed to be in AAA. This is where he's supposed to be this year.
But if you think he's playing better at AAA than he could ever hope to play in the major leagues, then you strike while the iron's hot, get some value.
If you think you can get more than he's worth, fine. But that's a perfectly good reason to do it. But the idea that you need to drum up a market so that you can get rid of your one of too many outfielders while you're playing infielders in the outfield.
Hey, Mike, Jake Fraley's back.
What are you talking about? Jake Fraley made a hell of a catch yesterday, by the way. No thank you. No thank you on trading Taylor Trammell because you've got too many outfielders.
Can we throw the curveball on this, though? What if that tweet, that whole conjecture, was less about Taylor Trammell and where he fits and more about the crowded outfield spot?
Mm.
And when it comes to that, who's the one player that this thing has always sort of turned on, the one question mark we haven't been able to answer? It's Mitch Haniger. Where is his future? By all accounts, without even rumors involved, a team would want to extend Mitch Haniger and probably would have wanted to for years.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are entering his final arbitration year next year. Then he walks for free after 2022, which is probably next year's maybe your playoff year, maybe, but certainly in 2 years, right? If you don't know for sure that he's going to be on your team in 2 years, now is the time you make a decision. You have 45 days to make a decision about Mitch Haniger, whether he's going to be here on your playoff
team. So I agree with all that. You got to walk me, maybe I'm slow. Walk me through the end of why you then float Taylor Trammell.
You float Taylor Trammell to let teams know, hey, we're ready to roll with our young guys, which means Mitch Haniger's available. Like, for a playoff team that wants to trade
Taylor Trammell, which means we're willing to run with young guys?
We have a crowded outfield, and Taylor Trammell is knocking down the door. I wonder if contending teams are looking for a rookie that hasn't performed anything. No. No way. I wonder if contending teams are looking for a potential all-star player nearing a contract.
I value to both things. I just don't think you're right about those two being connected. Where I thought you were going to go with it, which I thought would have been an interesting idea, is it's a way of showing faith in Kelnick. Like, yeah, you're struggling, but we believe in you so strongly that not only are we going to let you hit first forever, apparently, we're also going to deal potential competition because we believe in you that strongly.
Or it's just telling teams, we think we've got an overloaded outfield. We're willing to do business. We float Taylor Trammell. But hey, if you want to call us about Mitch Haniger, you know, we're willing to move an outfielder. Hey, guys, we know we saw your Trammell report. Look, we really want to talk about Haniger here.
Right.
Like, oh, all right. I mean, hey, we could be open to business if you want to blow us away.
A guy on pace for 42 home runs this year who gets on base, plays good
injured
defense.
All the time and hasn't signed a contract. Is there a way that you can picture where it's a good scenario that Mitch Haniger doesn't sign a contract extension by the trade deadline and is on the roster at the end of the year? That's difficult for me to see.
Yeah, you probably don't want to go into the final year with Mitch.
So, for me, the value that's is this 50 year. Days where you better figure out what's going to happen with Mitch
that's
Haniger,
a good point.
Your best player.
Yeah, all right, you're bringing me around on it. I think there's something to it. So all that is fine. Just don't trade Taylor Trammell because you're greedy. It's too early. It's too early to do that. All right, last thing here on the Mariners, and then we'll talk to Joe Fan. But I got one of these tweets yesterday, and I know Twitter's not real life, so I have to like always kind of start with that preface. But we say these things a lot, and yet I always feel like they don't fully sink in because it's hard. And I totally get where this guy's coming from. This came from a guy named David, who in the 10th there, maybe it was the 9th, it was after the 8th inning on Monday, on Memorial Day, where they blew the lead. They had 4-2 lead, and Misevich came in and just blew the lead, which happens. Anyway, he says, this is painful to watch today. These are the kind of losses that are inexcusable. It's not over yet, but not smart ball. I was like, really? It's inexcusable to lose a game after you've won 4 straight to a better team in the Oakland A's when you have a bunch of young guys? Like, there's no such thing as an inexcusable game to lose in general, but for them based on where they are in their development. But beyond that, like, the bullpen blows a lead? Like, of course that's excusable. That's like the most excusable thing the Mariners do. Anyway, he wrote me back and was like, hey, because I had said, well, of course they're excusable. They're young. They're rebuilding. They've spent about $4 on their bullpen. Like, yeah, they're going to lose some games. Anyway, the response is, I understand that, but it's been a long drought and fans are hopeful, but also tired waiting for the rebuild. I do believe they're moving in the right direction. Okay. Tough. Like, I just kind of keep coming back to this answer of, like, let me make this a little bit easier for you. Your patience is not going to be rewarded in May or June of 2021. No one is trying to take away the fact that it's been a long, painful 20 years. It has been all of those things. And frustration is running high. I get it. I understand it. I agree with it. I support it. But the idea of, well, I'm frustrated, so they better win in May and June of 21. Like, it just doesn't work that way. That's not what's going to get you over your anguish. What's going to get you over your anguish is investing this offseason and having the young kids come up and do the things they're supposed to do, not whether or not JT Chargwa is any good. That doesn't matter.
Chargwa.
I don't care. Chargwa. Is it Chargwa?
Costly Bach on Monday.
But... yeah, and that's a bummer. JT Chargwa, doesn't matter. It'd be great if he's good. Right? Paul Sewald's come in. He's been pretty good. Maybe he's part of it. I don't know. Maybe he goes back, turns into a pumpkin, and doesn't. That's fine. But it doesn't matter whether or not JT Chargwa does something dumb and box in a run in a big game. It doesn't matter. It has nothing to do with your frustration and the long drought. He's not part of that. Nor is, I mentioned him before, Jack Mayfield or Sam Haggerty. Or there was a guy playing for them last week I've legitimately never heard of.
His name was Eric Campbell, and I had to Google him because I thought he was the pitcher for the Rangers. And then I found out he is currently at the plate batting for the Mariners.
I have to say, I've never heard of him.
Oh,
I heard a little of the story. He was like ready to be done. He was going to coach
the Connecticut Sea Unicorns.
Yeah. And then he was like, yeah, I'll come
play. The Mariners were like, this dude of a college summer league is a career 223 major league hitter. And we could use him.
223 would be a huge upgrade.
He came in and he had
like
an
270 for 2 weeks.
I was like, who is this guy?
I never heard of him in my entire life. It's so weird when
missed
that
happens. Missed the transaction.
Right. Those things happen. You're like, well, I missed this one.
So, why they keep referring to a soup? Who is soup? Oh, Campbell. Soup Campbell.
It doesn't matter whether he's good. It does not affect this rebuild.
I hear you. None of it matters.
It matters if
it's
J.P. Crawford's good.
Too many years of it doesn't matter. And that's what the fan is coming
from. It's not that nothing matters.
Oh, it doesn't matter in 21. It didn't matter in 20. It didn't matter in 19 and 17 and 18 and 15 and 14.
That's not true, though. A lot of those things did matter.
It's too many years of being told this doesn't matter.
But I don't think we said that until it stopped mattering for a little while. Never say that in 14,
that.
15,
sure
16, 17. I didn't say that. Always said it mattered, was furious, was angry, was mad, was frustrated. I don't think anyone said those things then. They were when they had Cano and Cruz and Seager and like, of course it mattered. You have the horses. Go put the things around them and get it done. They failed. And ultimately, they went around the table and said, we're not good enough to get over the top. Let's tear it down to the studs and start over. And so for a little while, the extra pieces don't matter. They will again, trust me. When you're back in legitimate contention, and that may be as soon as next year, heck, it might be as soon as this September, if everything breaks the right way, all of a sudden, yeah, you better not be JT Chargwa, better be somebody that you care about. And I don't mean to take shots at him, he might be fine. The guy that I want to take shots at, who I can't watch, is Duggar. I don't know what, that bullpen games with him start, I can't do it.
It's not Montero?
No, I can deal with him.
You can watch Montero?
Yes.
Wow.
He's got good stuff.
Strong stomach. It must be those kidneys.
Because he's got good stuff, and I feel like it'll turn.
I'd send that guy to the moon.
No, I feel like it'll turn around. It's Duggar catching the whole plate, and it's tough for me. Anyway, and I wanted to strangle Misevich the other day because I feel like there should be some sort of rule, which is if you walk the leadoff man in the eighth inning with a two-run lead, something should happen to you. And I don't know what the right punishment for it is. Like, you get a blown save when you eventually blow it, and that's a punishment. And it's not like you should be sent to the minors for it, but is there like a good in between? Can they like dock some of their salary, like something to just like show that that's just unacceptable? You just can't walk the leadoff guy with a two-run lead. Just please don't do that.
Throw strikes
in the eighth inning with a lead. So that's where we're at. That's where we're at with the Mariners. It's June. It's the calendar is turned. Soon things hopefully will matter, Kyle, so that you'll be happy. I'll tell you what you can do in June, because we got Father's Day coming up this month, right? You got graduation, still a couple of late graduation parties, etc. And Famous Dave's got you covered. Catering special starting at $10 a person. You can celebrate your grad or your dad with award-winning barbecue with buffet-style options. Or maybe your grad is your dad. I don't know. I don't know how things work necessarily in your family. Maybe your dad went back to school.
That's a great thing to
finish his degree.
Exactly. Yes. All right, so here are the options. You ready? $10 a person gets you Georgia chop pork, barbecued pulled chicken sliders, and choice of two sides. You know, we've read this a few times. I don't think I ever put together that the barbecued pulled chicken was sliders.
Yeah. Little mini guys.
Little mini.
Handheld.
Yeah. That sounds pretty, like barbecued chicken gets all over you, but throw a bun in there, and now your hands are cleaner. So I like that. extra $2 a person, get $12 a person. Georgia chopped pork, barbecued pulled chicken sliders, add traditional chicken wings, and you still get your choice of two sides. Now, traditional chicken wings, would you say that's buffalo? Is that traditional?
It's bone-in, as opposed to boneless.
Yeah. So you think you get different, like you go barbecue sauce, it's still a traditional wing. Okay. $14 a person, still Georgia chopped pork, still barbecue pulled chicken sliders. Now you're going to add St. Louis style spare ribs and still get your choice of two sides. All of that at Famous Dave's. They're offering box meals. You can just ask one of the catering experts for all of the details. They are ridiculous when it comes to barbecue. We know this. 4 a.m. they wake up every day to hand rub the meats with fresh spices, slow cook them to perfection. It's why they've proudly had more than 700 barbecuing awards, and that is what makes them the authority in the barbecue world. So we've got locations in Everett, Northgate. That's the Ghost Kitchen. Even says there's so many T's and O's and S's and Ghost Kitchen here, it's hard to read. Tukwila, Tacoma, all at famousdaves.com/catering. All right, Joe Fan joining us for the first time, I believe, on the podcast. I can't recall a previous Joe. Is this the first time ever with the Brock and Salk experience?
Correct.
It is.
Yeah, this is a big moment for me.
Wow. We don't mess around. Like, if we're going to bring a guy in, we wait and then go whole hog. Like, you just come in and hang out. Right,
he's got to pass the litmus test before Brock gets entered into the conversation. True. All right, you know, you're here, you're going to pass the welcoming committee.
Right, yeah, we'll see how that is. NBC Sports Northwest, on with Jake and Stacy every week at 1 o'clock on Wednesdays. So part of the family here. You got your own podcast, which is also on video. It's kind of confusing. It's like it's a video asked.
We record on Zoom just to have some video promo stuff, but you can find it's the Talking Seahawks podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. So. You've been kind enough to come on and join me, so I appreciate you inviting me and being a part of this one.
Told it was the lowest rated episode they'd had. I don't know what happened.
Well, second lowest.
All right.
Jake Heaps was lower.
Oh, there. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was a given. And by the way, it's called a vodcast, Mike. It's very simple.
No.
Video podcast.
Okay.
A vodcast.
What did I call it? A video asked. You don't
yeah.
think?
Yeah.
I don't think it's a video asked. I'm not sure that that's
doesn't
what
have
it
the same,
is.
The same ring to it? A video asked? Surprising. It sounds good. Rolls off the tongue. Really feels good. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier, but I came in today and I was kind of preparing for the show and was thinking about what stories talk about, right? Kind of go through that. And honestly, this Julio Jones thing didn't even dawn on me to talk about because it seems so ridiculous that the Seahawks would trade for Julio Jones. Like, and then I started reading more. I'm like, wait, this is a thing? Russell wants him and the Seahawks are reaching out. I thought this was one of those crazy fan things where it's like, the Seahawks should get Jake Locker. That'll be great. Like, okay, yeah, we know the name Julio Jones. You're going to trade for an old wide receiver? No, this isn't real, is it?
An old wide receiver, that's not giving a whole lot of justice to Julio Jones. I mean, this guy is still an absolute superstar. Now, health has always been an issue with him. He only played 9 games last year, but he's still one of the best receivers in football. I think if you ask any player or coach to make their top 5, Julio Jones would be in the top 5 of a vast majority of them. I agree with you. It did seem like, why would they do that? Would they rather chase a Stephon Gilmore or an impact defensive piece as opposed to a high-priced wide receiver who's into his 30s when you just spent a second-round pick on Dwayne Eskridge? But Russ is pounding the table for this, and
well, tell
you know,
him to stop.
And the Seahawks are always
kids,
this team.
When my kids were toddlers, they pounded the table all the time. You know what you do? You hold firm and you say, "Stop pounding the table."
But
or
you
else
know
you're not
how much
food.
Pride Pete Carroll and John Schneider take in being involved in everything.
Okay,
and,
so
and pursuing everything at least to a certain degree. And
so
this is a situation.
That? Is this
where,
lip service to Russ?
I don't think necessarily. I think they are willing. To be like, is Julio going to take a pay cut? How bad do you want to win?
I mean, but like you don't have any picks, right? I mean, like you just had a year with no picks.
I don't think it's going to be that expensive to get him.
A sixth round pick?
I would say a day two pick and maybe a day three. But I don't think it's going to cost you a first rounder.
Well, sure. First rounder?
Well, what first rounder?
Well, that's why you don't even have a first rounder.
Well, that's my point.
And what I had heard out there was a second rounder. They can't. You
a second give, and a fourth.
You can't give up a second round pick for Julio Jones. He's going to be 32. Just remind me again about all the great wide receivers that win Super Bowls. Oh, wait. We got time. It's a podcast. The dead air is fine.
Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin.
Yeah, but the best wide receivers, you don't go and get elite wide receivers to win Super Bowls, especially when you already have DK Metcalf.
It's not like the equivalent of like go get the ace in baseball and get you over
no,
the top.
It's not even a little bit like that. No. In fact, you can make arguments the opposite. That generally the best wide receivers in the game don't win.
Which is kind of bizarre.
Bizarre all you want. It's a fact. Like
it is. I mean, you're right. You can go down the list of greatest receivers in NFL history, and a large number of them haven't won titles.
So do you think this
But do you think that's like a coincidence?
No, I don't. I think that they're an important position that generally gets overpriced because of the star factor, and that ultimately once you have an overpriced person at a position that can only impact the game in a certain way, it's not worth it, right? Like it unbalances the team. I also think that once you start feeding the ball to a wide receiver, there's negative consequences throughout, whether it's play calling, decision making, all of the things that make an offense function best end up becoming a problem. And, oh, by the way, I still don't believe in the whole offensive philosophy because I think that generally it's a defense that wins championships. And I know that's an old adage and we're like done with any old adages. They're gone. But I watched the Bucs win this past year. It wasn't because of those guys Kyle mentioned a couple minutes ago. Mentioned the guys in their front four, their front seven. That's a one for Tom Brady. So, no, I don't think it's a coincidence. I would actively not want them to trade for Julio Jones.
I have to see what it costs. Because to me, like, would you rather have Julio Jones on your team or not? And I know it's an oversimplification, but I think, yes,
I'd rather not. Yeah, at the money? I mean, you're going to have to pay him something. I mean,
you have to pay him something.
And it's going to have to be significant. You're not paying him league minimum.
Which is why I don't think it's going to happen ultimately.
I would be
shocked if it happened. But, the fact that they're exploring it as an option, to me, is like, all right, well, let's see.
You mentioned another name that I would actually rather focus on, which is Stephon Gilmore or Stapon Gyamore, depending on which pronunciation you prefer.
Yours.
Well, we've heard both. Stapon Gyamore is, we have that over there.
Stapon Gyamore. Stapon Gyamore.
There's a guy on the internet.
It's like Sacagawea, Sacagawea. There's been a lot of debate. Yeah. How do you pronounce it? Nobody knows.
I'm not sure which way he goes. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
Who is that guy?
Stapon Gyamore. Stapon Gyamore.
He's one of the internet's best pronunciation experts.
Stapon.
He's on the internet. And
in reality, it's when we didn't know if it was Stephen or Stefan, and right. We found this man who pronounced his entire draft class all wrong.
Yeah. Stapon Gyamore. Stapon Gyamore.
He's got to be like this is a joke, right?
No,
like
it's pretty serious. You should watch. That guy's got a whole YouTube channel.
An entire draft class.
There's hundreds, if not thousands, of pronunciations.
Names are not a joke. You got to call people by their names.
But that's how he talks?
Yeah.
Evidently.
Stapon Gyamore. Stapon Gyamore.
It's sassy.
Got a little edge to it.
You mentioned that name. What does that take?
I think it's probably in the same ballpark. I don't think any of these guys are commanding first rounders.
All right,
with this guy coming off of an injury.
So you're telling me you have a choice between Julio Jones or pronounce the guy's name. Stephon Gilmore. And you either way you'd have to give up the same very small amount and pay them which would you rather have?
I'd take Stephon Gilmore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can we make that happen? I'm in for that. Like how do I sign up for that?
Yeah.
I'm in. 100% all in. Where do I sign up?
We gotta talk to Russ.
Okay. Oh, Russ doesn't want him?
Yeah. We gotta talk to Russ.
He's gotta be on the wish list.
Yeah. He's gotta be on the wish list.
So you're telling me if we go to Russ, you're Pete, I'm John. Okay?
Yeah.
Would you want to be Pete or John? You can be whoever you want. Who would you rather be?
I'll be Pete.
Okay, you be Pete. I'll be John. And I say, all right, brother, we're going
to... You ready to bring that big old back on up here?
we'll make a deal here. I like to trade for Stapon Gyamore. And Pete, do you want to talk to Russ? You're going to say to me, we have to talk to Russ?
Yeah, we got a really neat opportunity. And anytime you get a neat opportunity, you got to take advantage of it. And, we look at everything. And you look at a guy like Stephon Gilmore and just a really competitive football player. We want to get in the program.
Okay. And so you're going to bring that to Russ, and he's going to be like, no, don't want him?
Oh, I was joking.
That's where I'm
going. No. But are you, though? Seriously, though. But are you, though? Are you joking? Because there does seem a lot of, like,
hey,
requested
Russ, sorry.
Fealty from Russ that's been asked for the last 18 months.
Yeah, sorry. We decided to go with a one All-Pro instead of the All-Pro you
wanted.
When
they did Jamal Adams last year, was that enough for him to say, like, I mean, he was obviously excited. We saw the reaction and everything, but was that like, okay, this is the sign that I need to see that we're going for
it. And here's the problem. If and no one is accusing Russ necessarily of saying, I want Julio Jones and don't want Stephon Gilmore. But if that's the case, what he's truly saying is, I want to win shootout, so I'm a hero.
I don't think I can argue with that.
Right? I mean, that'd be the only, hey, I need the player to be on my side, not on the other side. I don't mind the other side giving up points because I want to be the hero and win 45-42 and have everyone say, oh my God, look what Russ did.
Well, the less cynical way to look at that is to him to say, I can't control what happens on the other side of the ball, but I can control when it's in my hands. Oh. So give me as much as you can to let me have the control to win us.
I think we just said the same thing.
There are two sides to that coin.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
it might be the same side.
I feel like we said the same thing.
So there are shades of the same side of that coin right there.
What are the chances of a Stephon Gilmore trade?
Just real quick on Russ, if I may.
Yeah.
There's also a layer of this, and I might be adding the same side of the same coin again. Do we think that Russ is thinking this through as maybe practically as, you know, not as being as practical as we would when we're hashing out, like, well, who makes more sense, Stephon Gilmore or Julio Jones? Like, well, Russ putting together a fantasy football team just kind of sounds like something that Russ would want. Like, it's a big name. That's what we want. We want Greg Olsen because he's my buddy, and we hung out, and he's had a great career, and let's get, you know.
Right. Like, we want it to be as well thought out as his media tour this past February.
Yeah.
Which was ill-conceived.
Like, are we shocked
way that
Russell Wilson wants one of the greatest receivers of all time?
No, but Russ is acting like a fan, right? I mean, if that's the case, he's talking like a fan. I totally understand why fans want Julio Jones. Great player. You know the name. Big, you know, he's accomplished a tremendous amount in his career. No one looks under the hood on players like that. And if being in this business has taught me anything, is that over once you know guys at that level, they're not as good as they used to be. Right? Whatever you're getting from Julio Jones is not what you would have gotten a few years ago. By the way, the same thing is true of Stephon Gilmore. I understand that. He just plays a position where I'd be willing to take a bet more than at wide receiver, but I go in eyes wide open that those guys have been all pros however many times, and they're probably not as good as they once were. The thing is, I guess I expect Russ to know that.
Yeah, I don't. I would say, I mean, he just pined for Greg Olsen a year ago.
That's true.
Who hadn't played a full season.
But the rest
years
of us learned from that. Did Russ not learn from that?
Antonio Brown.
I know.
Are you shocked?
I don't think Russ would be a very good GM.
You sound a little surprised.
I don't think so.
I guess I am. Yeah, I guess I am surprised. Okay, fine. I understand why he wanted those guys. I understand the Greg Olsen thing and what tight ends are doing in this league right now. It's fine. But it didn't work, and he should recognize that the same way Jimmy Graham didn't work. Like, he should recognize what works and what doesn't, right? Like, he doesn't seem to. Like, and making mistakes is fine, especially in personnel. He's not even a personnel guy. But making the same one over and over again seems like problematic.
What I would say about making a Julio Jones trade or a Stephon Gilmore trade is that I kind of, especially in football where you have this window with a championship quarterback, I'm okay with kicking the can down the road and giving it a shot and saying, hey, that's going to be a tomorrow problem. And we saw some of those tomorrow problems come up with the Jamal Adams deal where they didn't have any draft capital. They don't again next year. They still have to pay him, which to me is a bigger story than whether or not they're going to trade for Julio Jones or Stephon Gilmore. So, like, they've already gone in this far. I'm sort of down with them just seeing how far they can push it. And that's what the Saints have been doing for years and years.
I know, and that's why they keep winning all those championships.
But, like, you're in the race.
They're getting farther than the Seahawks.
I mean, as long as you have Russell Wilson in his prime, you sort of have to.
I have no problems with him going for it. I'm pro going for it. I think that we're seeing some of the ill effects of the Jamal Adams trade, but I support it. I supported it then, and I still support it because I understand the thinking behind it. I just don't want them to get an old wide receiver. I mean, if you're going to spend that capital and go down the road, I'm fine. Go get Stephon Gilmore. Go get Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
Just the Julio Jones thing. I don't know. It doesn't sound right to me. We saw these OTAs are rookie mini camp, essentially, right? It's hard keeping up with what the NFL names all these things.
Well, it became a rookie mini camp because the veterans didn't show up.
Right.
Correct. So, we had 2 days at VMAC for rookie mini camp.
Okay.
And then last week there was supposed to be an open practice. It was canceled due to rain because they practiced indoors. Media is only allowed to be on the berm.
But you got some eyes on, right? You got some eyes on guys.
On the rookies.
Was Daryl Taylor out there?
Daryl Taylor was out there.
Considering him a rookie for a moment, if I'm looking at what's out there for the Seahawks this year of unknowns, the number one unknown I'm hoping turns into something is Daryl Taylor. How did he look?
Absolutely. He was out there and healthy, which is a start because we didn't see it at all last year. And every week during the regular season in 2020, you know, Pete kind of, I think he's almost there. He's almost there. Another setback. Almost there. Another setback. He finally got 1 week of practice before the wild card game against the Rams. But now he's back and he's healthy. And it seems like the Seahawks are kind of intent on making him Bruce Irvin 2.0. I think they want him to compete with Cody Barton to be the starting strong side linebacker and then have an edge presence on pass rush downs. Should he be able to do that? And he's thin. He's definitely, how'd he look? He looked small. I mean, listed as 265. He's like 245, 247 right now.
Really?
Wants to get back to 260.
I could do that.
Yeah.
I could help. I could help him with that.
Need a hand?
The walking tacos this weekend added 4 pounds themselves. Yeah,
I'm in the process.
Yeah. Okay.
Sprinted there over Memorial Day weekend. And so I think that's where they're at with him, because I think if they can keep him on the field for three downs and starting at strong side linebacker, then you have more pass rush snaps for Alton Robinson and Benson Mayoa and Carlos Dunlap and Kerry Hyder, who can play inside outside but was at his best when he was at the five tech. So you're all of a sudden getting more pieces on the field, and not just pieces, but pieces that you've invested heavily in. I mean, that's so much of the conversation of fans wanting KJ right back, it's like you just took a first-round linebacker, you took a second-round pass rusher, you took a third-round linebacker the year before. At some point, you got to get something out of these guys, or you end up trading all your picks to replace them, and you know, that's what happened with Jamal Adams. So he looked healthy. It was interesting. He said that he still feels, he doesn't know if he's ever going to get past the leg injury, sort of like what Tyler Lockett said like a month prior, where he's kind of just had to find a way to make it work a half step slower. You know, I fell on his broken leg. That might be similar here, but you know, everyone's kind of hoping for the best, I think, is really all you can do at this point.
That's such a brutal thing to hear, though, right? I mean, all of that sounds great, but when I hear, well, I'm never going to be as fast as I was, and he was a risky pick to begin with.
Insanely risky pick.
Right, you talk to Brock, and he's like, yeah, he's sort of one of those guys who looks the part but didn't always, you know, play the part when he was out there. For a team that needs pass rush desperately and needs to hit on one of their few picks, like, he's immensely important. And I hope this isn't one of those lost situations where he comes back and then immediately gets hurt again. And you're like, gosh, there's just nothing here. I really hope I'm wrong on that, because by all accounts, Pete loves him. He's got the body for it, right? Like, he's got all the size and strength, or at least he did before he dropped 20 pounds.
I wrote last year, towards the end of the season, that if Daryl Taylor ends up being a bust, which I'm not calling him a bust, we have no idea. But I think quite literally no idea. It's just going to go anyway. But this would be a comprehensive organizational failure. I mean, in a year, in a pre-draft process that was so bizarre, they didn't get in-person visits. They not only saw him at the combine, they got him in their building.
Mm.
So they don't just have the combine medicals. They had their own team say, hey, we feel good about where his leg is at. The entire organization greenlit the pick. John Schneider talked about how they considered taking him in the first round where they took Jordan Brooks. He was the guy they coveted and spent all day on that Friday trying to trade up in the second round to go get him. He was their pass rusher at their greatest need with all the talk. Seahawks
he's the
pass
one
rusher.
They wanted.
He was the one they wanted. Said he's healthy as the horse after being drafted. Nothing that happened on draft night gave any sort of indication, like, but by the way, this guy might need a redshirt year.
Yeah.
And here we are. So any optimism has to be so cautious.
How do you think we would view that draft if he had been their first round pick and then they had still gotten Jordan Brooks where they got Daryl Taylor? How do you think we'd view that draft right now? Better, worse, same?
Far worse.
Far worse.
Far worse.
So
far
another worse. Unmitigated disaster.
But Jordan Brooks, like Malik McDowell. If Jordan Brooks had done what he did last year as a second round pick, you'd be pretty psyched about it, right?
Sure, but the first round
pick. If your first round pick
didn't that upset.
But it's still a bit of that. They traded up 10 spots to get him.
Right.
And considered taking him in the first. So
and we've
kind of,
seen them with those trade up second round guys. You know, those are guys they really like, right? That's Jaron Reed, right? And Jaron Reed's a really good player here for a number of years. Did they trade up for Frank Clark? Or did he just... Or did
Tyler Lockett's the one they traded.
That was in
Tyler
the third Lockett's round, the sure. But I know they traded up in the second round for Jaron Reed. Anyway, it just... It's funny. I still like the Jordan Brooks trade, or pick, rather. And as I kind of like wait to see what's going to happen this year, I think he's a great fit with where the NFL is going. Fast linebacker, right? And I know that he'll be compared to Patrick Queen, who's more of a bullying type of tackling linebacker. And he got on the field and did some things last year, probably played more than Brooks did. But from everything I saw last year, right? Don't you think that Jordan Brooks is like exactly where the game is going?
Yeah, I don't think you. I'm just kind of wait and see on him too. Everything I saw was like, oh, all right. You see some of the traits. You see the speed, the physicality, the instincts. I think the game slowed down for him a bit late in the year. I remember it was the Rams game in Week 16. Didn't they play the Rams in Week 16? Right, they played them twice in a 3-week span. And on the goal line sequence, Jordan Brooks had like 3 tackles in a 4-play span. That was kind of his signature moment. And so he definitely gave you those, like, all right, this is what they saw in him and why they view him as their future at linebacker. But it's just until he does it in a full-time capacity, it's just you can't bank on that. You can't say, well, you know, you got Jordan, they're good.
Right.
Again, I think the Seahawks are at a point where
you said it earlier, you've got to take that risk, right? Like, you've got to commit to it and find out whether or not what you've done has worked.
You have to. Absolutely.
Or otherwise, you're paying money to essentially duplicate what you've already spent capital on.
Which is what they've done with Quandre Diggs.
You can't do it, which is why you can't afford to go try the Julio Jones thing or some of these other kind of cockamamie ideas. I just, tell me about the about this year's first pick. I know it's not a first round pick, but what did you see from Eskridge?
Yeah, I think he was the one that really stood out. And you never want to take away too much of an hour-long practice with they're going, I don't know, 70% speed. There's no one-on-one, but Dwayne Eskridge was fast, and he's big. Like, you see the size. He's, what, like 5'10", but like 5'9", but like he's a built dude. And Pete regularly, instead of mentioning the speed, mentioned the physicality. I mean, this is kind of a guy who seems to be shaping up for a role kind of like what Deebo Samuel is in Kyle Shanahan's offense.
Now he's speaking the right names, Joe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, Mr. Joe. Come on, Mr. Joe. Now. Talking Deebo Samuel,
now.
Mr. Joe.
There's only one way to get Mike Salk excited about a wide receiver, and it's to invoke the name of the great, legendary, one and only generational talent,
all right.
Deebo Samuel.
Why don't you calm down over
the
there?
The reincarnation of a more physical cyborg version
Mike
of Jerry
Rice. Mike
would
trade DK Metcalf for Deebo Samuel right now.
I'd say that.
You didn't say that, but you would. I said that.
He's going to field a team full of Thomas Rawls and Deebo Samuel and just let it ride.
All right, hold on. Thomas Rawls didn't work out. Deebo Samuel's really good. Everybody likes him, don't they?
Deebo Samuel is perennially injured. He's never
absolutely.
Healthy.
Well, he's only been in the league 2 years. How
and
perennially can
never,
he be?
2 years.
Two annuals.
never healthy.
Two annuals.
Yeah, Deebo only played 7 games last year, but he is a stud. I do think that's what you're looking at here, because so much of...
You know that off the top of your head? He only played 7 games?
I got Google
okay,
here.
Okay, good. Thank God.
World Wide Web.
Who knows that off... Well, you said it with such confidence.
We're
going to
teach some about radio theater. That's a yes. Right. I do know that off the top of my
head. Sure do.
No, I'm okay. Yes.
Used to cover the Niners. Yeah.
You don't have to admit that. Yeah. Hold on. He played 15 games his rookie year.
Yeah, he was decent.
And then last year he got hurt. Come on.
Yeah.
How do you know his rookie stats off the top of his head?
Well, I Googled that Pro Football Reference. But I took time, like, to, you know, let the machine do its work, obviously. You were instant with that. All right, so he's got some Deebo Samuel to him. Does he have some Golden Tate to him?
When you're talking about Golden Tate, you're talking physicality and you're talking yards after the catch ability.
Yeah,
right?
And some of the build, right? Like, Golden's not the fastest guy out there, but he had some of the running back mentality, had played running back, right? Makes catches in traffic, gets crushed, and doesn't seem to affect
him. So are we
going to
start selling Dwayne Eskridge as the faster Golden Tate?
I don't know.
Dwayne
That's my question.
Eskridge is the fastest guy out there. He's a legit track star.
And did I hear that we're not to call him Dwayne?
It's D.
It's D. D. Eskridge. Not just letter D. Is that like D4DE?
I think it's D-E-E.
Okay.
D. I like that.
Yeah, I mean,
I got some flash to it.
Yeah.
Could he be the faster Golden Tate?
I think he can be the faster Golden Tate.
I like that. I didn't love Golden when he was here, but I'm excited actually to get somebody like him back.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I totally get it. You're looking at integration in the running game. You're looking at, you know, the horizontal, get him in space, let him operate. And still with the speed to get behind a defense. And he beat Trey Brown, fourth round pick, twice deep.
Well, does that say much?
I mean, he's your fourth round pick, and he's also got track star speed.
I'm
so
a little
like,
worried about
it doesn't
guy.
Say nothing.
I watched that guy's highlight reel, and it looked like he got beat a few times in his highlight reel.
Yeah, on his highlight reel.
I was like watching Seahawks.com, like, and I was like, oh no, he got beat on that play. Yeah. Like, he kind of.
A quarterback overthrew it, and then he touched the guy.
That's kind of what it looked
classic
like.
Classic quarterback. Incomplete. Not on me.
I was a little worried about him. Okay, so D. Eskridge beat him.
The best part of DBs. I love that. Just a blatant drop in the.
You have to.
No fly zone here, folks. No fly zone here.
Don't you have to have that attitude as a DB?
You do.
Right, you have to believe.
It doesn't make it not funny. Yeah.
That's fair.
Absolutely.
It's the same attitude as like a sharpshooter, three-point shooter who banks one in. You still got to raise your hands and do whatever you do.
Get the Wesley Matthews arrow going.
Right. Like, you still have to because
Wesley Matthews for the Lakers plays like 7 minutes a game now, and he like goes 1 for 3, but he makes that one arrow. Fernando Rodney's it.
Joe's legitimately making up names now on the podcast. I don't have any idea who that is.
All right.
We're talking about the NBA. This is the Brock and Salk podcast.
You brought up hoops. You opened the door. I walked in.
Not with players from after 1998. I mean, like, we have rules here.
Okay. Try 88.
Oh, what? Hey. That's unnecessary. So, all right. Well, so that's where the Seahawks are at, huh? You like D. Eskridge. He's a faster Golden Tate, and he's going to be used in more ways.
Yep.
We're still a little worried about what we're going to get out of Daryl Taylor.
As everyone should be.
As we should be. You are pro Julio Jones.
Yes.
First round pick? Oh,
no.
You don't have one. Second round pick.
I'd love it to be like a third.
Well, I don't care what you want. Like, will you take would you give up a second round pick for him?
Is he restructuring his contract?
Why would Julio want to restructure his contract?
You use every cent of your remaining money to get him.
Yes.
And you got to sign Jamal Adams still.
Yeah.
So you can still do that.
Yeah, you can still do that.
You can sign Jamal, but you got
to. Fired up. I'm here for chaos. I'm team chaos.
Well, so chaos it is. Okay.
Make the trade.
All right. Joe says make the trade. We'll see what John Schneider does here in the next little while. Joe Fan was fun. I like having Joe on. That's good. Which is better? It's been a while.
So good to hear that music.
I know, and Brock likes it so much that I thought I'd do it while he was out. Brock suggests which is better all the time, and I'm always like, man, I don't have enough for it.
World Acclaim segment.
Who? World Acclaim?
World Acclaim.
Who acclaimed it around the world?
Everyone in the world acclaims the segment.
I like the word acclaimed. That's good. Good word. All right, here we just got a few. It's a short which is better. But since it was Memorial Day weekend... One we've had before, but it's always worth revisiting. Which is better, Memorial Day or Labor Day?
Memorial Day.
Because it's the beginning of summer, not the end?
Start of it all.
Weather's usually better on Labor Day, but with the weather's going to be like, this is the warmest Memorial Day in like 30 years.
I saw that. Yeah, it hit 80 degrees in Seattle on Monday.
Beautiful. It was like perfect.
Now, Labor Day, you're going to get the start of the college football season. You're a week away from NFL season.
Yes.
There's a lot going on there.
The weekend to watch the September call-ups.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Memorial Day, though. It shows that summer's on the way. Often can be disappointing because you're like, man, it's 50 degrees and I'm cold. I'm trying to barbecue and it doesn't quite work out. But if it's going to be like this, just spectacular.
And I appreciate the holiday, too. That holiday to me means it's very more meaningful than most.
I would agree with that. It usually gives me the chance to tell my favorite Don O'Neill story of how every year I would come in like the day after Memorial Day, Ron would take off. And I'd like work with Don and be like, so, what'd you do for Memorial Day? Be like, oh, actually, it's pretty good. Like, barbecued with my family, or I went camping, whatever the case may be. Like, yeah, because what I did is I volunteered for some veterans. And you're like, oh my gosh. And then he'd like tell like a 15-minute story of the incredible like things he would do to. Like, all right, man.
Okay.
He couldn't just tell that story without making me look cold-hearted. Like, jeez. All right.
Mike, let me tell you what I did.
Seriously. Which is better, since we just brought it up, hiking or camping?
camping is significantly better than hiking.
Takes a lot longer.
Significantly.
You have
better.
To sleep.
Part of why it's better.
But you have to sleep on something uncomfortable. That's I think
you
that's the one thing.
You have to.
You kind of do. Because I have the tallest queen pillow top air mattress you can find.
Oh, wow.
It's gigantic. It almost doesn't fit in the tent. It's so tall. I have to like use a trampoline to get up onto
them. Oh, good. Mount yourself.
And it's still pretty uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, it's an air mattress. Like
what would be, I mean...
Yeah, I don't know what you...
You can't be comfortable sleeping camping. It's just, it's a non-starter.
The air mattress, it just doesn't support... You know, you can have like a cot or something.
Well, you can't bring a cot. I have room for a cot.
It's very simple. The reason why camping is better is because there's eating involved in camping.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
There's almost no eating involved in hiking, and there's a lot of hard work and sweat in hiking. No.
Really, what camping is for me is planning what I'm going to eat.
Yes.
That's what I learned from the Silver Fox.
Yes.
It's just planning what I want to eat.
What am I going to eat? What am I going to drink? And is there an experience I can do? Is there a river or a lake I can sit in?
So we did walking tacos again this time.
Oh, beautiful.
Kind of your go-to camping.
Yeah, and the kids get super excited. If you don't know, if you haven't listened before, walking tacos are essentially all the ingredients for tacos spread out with spoons, and then you buy a variety pack of Frito-Lays, and you open a small bag, dump in all the stuff, stir it around, and then eat it with a fork. It's so good. And I'm doubling down on what I said last year. Cheetos are the best one.
Wow.
I know it's bizarre, but the taste gets kind of overwhelmed by everything else, and you're just left with the satisfying crunch. It's amazing. It's so good.
I love
this Cheetos. Year, we got a different plant pack, though, and it had Funyuns in it.
Oh, yeah?
You didn't. Make Cecily onion did. Tacos.
Yeah, I had one. It was pretty good. Better than you think. Oh, you don't like onions in general, right?
Yeah, but...
you don't like Funyuns?
I mean, that's just a little... Now, like chili cheese Fritos or something. That could be interesting.
Very nice.
That would be fine. That didn't come in the variety pack.
Very nice.
Funyuns were pretty good. Funyuns are kind of underrated in general. Funyuns
Cecily just carving her own path.
Funyuns and Bugles, both underrated.
Bugles are... You know, I tried to buy a giant bag of Bugles a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I made it through like 10, and I was like, this is getting gross.
Which is better.
But I really liked the first
Which is
10.
Better, Funyuns or Bugles?
Bugles are
Bugles.
Better.
Oh, and you can put them on Bugles your fingers, better. At least when you're a kid, and you're like, have like
creepy, black olives.
And then you're a witch.
Yes. Very fun.
Well, appropriate for yesterday. Which is better, freeway traffic or surface street traffic?
I say surface street traffic because at any moment it feels like all of it could move.
I don't know. You used to get locked in and you're like, you feel like you can't escape. Both things have that like claustrophobia issue of like, I can't escape. I'm trapped here. I think surface street traffic's worse. It's so frustrating.
It's so hard to look at all those cars in front of you and know that I cannot see a place where people are moving.
And then you start being, I bet it's going to take us 5 turns of this light. It might take us 6.
That's a bad feeling.
We're toast. On the freeway.
Yeah, like there's always like hope that around the bend.
Endless monotony of it. Like, see what's up there.
We're just hanging out here. Yeah, I think freeway traffic.
It's like when the Fremont Bridge is up and you just know, like, right. Well, it's 25. I'm going to shut the car off. We're not moving.
Which is better, the Rams or the Niners? Right now, today, who's better?
The Niners.
I think the Rams are better.
I think it's the Rams. I don't think it's close. I'm much more worried about the Rams.
I don't even know what's the weak spot of the Rams.
They have Matt Stafford at quarterback.
Yeah, Matt Stafford.
Yeah, that's not a bad weak spot.
No, but... Yeah,
that's a good roster. If your weakest spot is a quarterback that's perennially in the Pro Bowl, you're doing okay.
Yeah, I think the Rams are better. I think it's not that. Like, Niners just haven't, I don't know.
The
I know they
disrespect
went to the Super Bowl.
To Debo Samuel. Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle. You love these guys.
Mike Juszczyk.
Juice.
I don't like their quarterback situation.
You don't like the Rams quarterback situation.
It's true. I don't like either one. I like what the Rams do up front, though, on defense. And not that
you
the
like
Niners don't. Well, yeah.
You like Michael Brockers.
Those guys are pretty good.
They're all right.
They're all right.
The fact that Michael Brockers made his way back there is nauseating.
And there's that other dude who just sacked Russell Wilson like 6 times.
Yeah.
Little? Is that his name?
Leonard Floyd?
That's him.
Yeah. Leonard Floyd.
Leonard Floyd. He's just.
Yeah, he is.
He's like their 7th best player on that D-line. Which is better? Baseball's 10th inning rule that we talked about earlier, where you start with a runner on second, or the coin toss to start overtime in the NFL.
Coin toss. The coin toss.
That's how bad, because the coin toss is still ridiculous.
It's dumb.
Yeah, I think it's still better than the 10th inning thing. At least the 10th inning thing is fair, though.
I love
it. At least it's fair for both sides.
That's a good point.
It is fair. The coin toss is still, in its core, it's unfair. And it's still better. That's how bad the 10th inning rule is.
And I love rule changes. I love it when they try to update and edit games. To me, that's great. I hate this baseball thing. You've nailed
the baseball thing. It's essentially college football overtime. We're going to put the ball in the red zone and give both teams a chance to score.
That's true.
That's there. We're going to put a runner in scoring position and give you both a chance to
score. Would you feel better about it if it was late? I mean, because I've seen that argument. Like, do it in the 11th or 12th. Yep. And I still think that's stupid. You ever been watching a 15-inning game and been like, oh, this is terrible.
Got 20. Let's go.
Right, like, you're in. You're in for a penny, in for a pound.
I was 15 years old staying up until the 17th inning at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, like, Red Sox Mariners?
Yeah.
I remember that game. It's like 2000?
Something like 2001? That. It's just like, man,
I don't know if I can do this. Players, the bullpen is empty. There's just a coach and a catcher out there.
I got to go to school
there.
In 5 hours.
Dude, those things are the best.
You watch
awesome.
It.
I'm all for, and we're not going to get those nearly as often anymore. Such a bummer. The great thing too in extra inning games, old rules, is when like you get to like the 15th and then someone scores and then the other team scores. You're like, oh my god, it's going longer. It's so great.
No team has scored a run in the last 8 innings,
right?
And now they both score.
And sometimes they both score like 2.
Yeah.
It's so cool, and all that is just sort of not the same anymore, and it's just kind of a bummer. So, all right, that's which is better. It was a short one, I told you. I had Kelnick or Gilbert, but I don't want to say it yet. I don't want to get that yet. We'll hang on to that.
Your boy Gilbert showing out a little bit.
He pitched well. I was really glad to see that. I was a little nervous about Gilbert, so I was very, very happy to see what
he's using the changeup, Mike. Don't worry about him.
We just need to use the changeup. Okay, that's all I needed to hear. Well, we changed it up this week. It was our little changeup. No Brock this week. He's hopefully going to bring us back fish, right? I mean, that's...
He better. That's kind of the unspoken agreement.
Right.
One of the unwritten rules of the Brock and Salk podcast.
We let him go to Alaska. He brings us fish.
Fish.
Yeah, it just seems fair, especially this time of year. Yeah, Copper River, you kind of throw it on the grill. It's kind of what we're expecting.
Had some Copper River
here.
This last weekend.
How was
it?
Oh,
incredible.
You paid for Copper River?
No way.
I didn't.
My dad brought it out.
There's no way you paid for Copper River.
My dad bartered.
I'm surprised you even believe it's better than regular salmon.
It was incredible.
Good. Good to hear. All right, that's Brock and Salk Podcast. We'll be back with you guys next week. Brock will be back as well. Until then, the hay is the ball. See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!